You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
I'm Kim Grinnell of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. Week one of spring ball 2021 is in the books, and for those who are out of town, wasn't cold out there today, just absolutely gorgeous day on the shores of Lake Washington with football practice taking place inside the stadium as opposed to the east practice field. And for those planning on coming out Saturday, we'll tell you a little bit about what's going to happen on Saturday, but Jimmy Lake talked a little bit about that post-practice. We'll give you a glimpse of what to expect, but I think the biggest thing to plan for is Saturday. The weather is supposed to be approaching 80 degrees, so shorts weather on Saturday, so should be really, really nice. But think that jumped out today, we had a lot of live sessions on both sides of the ball today, Chris.
Yeah, it was interesting because so typically they do have 11-on-11 sessions during the meat of the practice, where they'll actually go back to back, Kim. So they'll have the ones on one side, they'll have the twos on the other side, and they're able to just double up their reps because of it. But at the end of practice is typically when they have their extended kind of team session, and it was there where they had a couple of runs with the ones, and I think it was Cameron Davis was started with the ones running backs, and it was like a third or one, and all of a sudden they went from what they call their cut tempo or wrap tempo, thud tempo, which is basically as full speed as possible, but still keep them upright. You can wrap them up and then let them go. And then all of a sudden we heard from Coach Saha, we heard live, and it was like all of a sudden the light bulb goes on.
We
don't hear that at all. And all of a sudden it was like live. It's like, whoa, okay. So immediately my thought was, okay, Jimmy Lake wants to see short yardage. He wants to see how they're going to react when it's like, you know, the bullets are flying, so to speak. And the offense was able to get the first down on a third and one. And then, unfortunately, some other news broke I had to take care of. But over the course of that final team period, it certainly looked like they mixed and matched a lot of this wrap tempo, which is kind of their base tempo during spring practice, with some live tempo. And especially at the goal line, they were able to do a lot of live tempo as well, which I thought was really fun.
And Scott, Jimmy Lake talked post-practice about the amount of live that they went. And like we said, we've never seen this much live.
I would say that's some of the case, yeah. I remember Sark making Jeff Lindquist live one time, making the quarterbacks live in practice one time. That was a little unique, too. So, yeah, I think Jimmy just wants to have more live stuff with guys, get them used to the tempo, how things go, and just get used to the live reps.
Yeah. Tell me, is there a player or two that stood out to you today, Chris?
Well, I just thought, again, during the 11-on-11, there was some really mixed stuff with the receivers. I thought Jalen Polk really stood out today as having his best practice of spring so far. I thought Roma Dunze had his best practice of spring so far. I just have not been that impressed with Jalen McMillan yet. He just has not stood out to me as a guy that makes catches down the field, is a playmaker, which completely belies what he was in high school. You watch his film in high school, he was ridiculous. So I'm waiting for the light bulb to come off or to go off on him, and it will eventually. But right now, to me, Bynum, Polk, and Odunze are the three guys that have really stood out in the receiver game. And they really stood out to me on the 11-on-11s when they were catching passes. Again, a lot of drop passes, and more importantly for me, a lot of pre-snap penalties when it came to, false starts, offsides, things like that, which Jimmy Lake talked about after practice in terms of how they clean that stuff up with he didn't talk about it specifically, but we've seen it before with gassers and crab walks and other types of physical punishment.
And, you know, we talked to Jimmy Lake after practice about, you know, the drop passes. And I kind of agree with Jimmy. It's just going to happen. It happens everywhere. It happens all over the country. And, you know, I think sometimes the fans and even people in the media grab onto one thing and they just won't let it go. We saw it last year with the linebacker play, you know, where people made a huge deal out of that. And we're so early in the process and we've still got a fall camp. And, you know, the thing of it is just a bad practice. And if we start seeing this, you know, from here on out, that might be a different story. But, you know, there were a lot of drop passes, but I don't think that's going to continue.
Well, as an ex-receiver, I know that you're – the more balls that touch the ground, the more you get yelled at in your film sessions and stuff. So, you know, we can downplay it all we want. It's something to – I don't know if it's worth being concerned about that it's a – that it's going to be an ongoing thing. And,
oh, my God, the sky is falling.
Yeah,
these guys
I don't know if it's that yet, but it's something to actually put in the back of your mind and say, all right, are they going to improve off of this? I'm hoping they do. We saw Jalen have some issues last year catching the ball. Puka had some struggles catching the ball last year. There were some drops. I mean, Terrell Bynum was wide open and had one that would have been a huge gain in team session and dropped it. Romo Dunsey drops the one. It was the easiest catch in the world, but the one that was over his shoulder, which would have been a touchdown. He had one earlier with the exact same throw, but that he did make the catch on. So, I don't know. I'm not gonna say it's worth jumping off the cliff over, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
One thing I would add to the mix is that they are going up against some pretty good defensive backs. I mean, when you look at Trent McDuffie, when you look at Kyler Gordon, even when they're going up against some of the guys, whether it's Bookie Radley-Hiles, Cam Fabiculainen is getting a lot of work in there with the corners and the nickel as well. You know, they're going up against some good players, but you can tell when there's misses, and we're on the same section as a lot of the fans are, and the groans are audible when you can tell that it's yeah. if there's no pressure on the inside in terms of these guys, they'll eventually get it. You can tell on the outside, they understand these guys need to step up.
Yeah, and I mean, you make the mention about the DBs, and I don't disagree with you on that, but these are not contested passes that they're dropping, and that's where the concern comes.
But there are a lot of contested passes that are dropped as well.
But I don't count those as drops.
But that's where I see a guy like Jalen Polk coming in and doing a nice job. The very first big catch he had this morning was on a contested ball where it was dead 50-50 to the point where I think they blew the horn inadvertently. They thought it was a pick, but he had come up with a catch.
Yeah, and they actually called it incomplete. The refs did.
Yeah, it looked like a catch to me. He thought it was a catch.
Well, the one to Odunzi that he dropped, it looked like he got turned around a little bit and was looking over the wrong shoulder and was really having a tough time adjusting to the ball. I don't know if I would call it more of course, it was a drop, and you've got to make those, but it was almost like he had a tough time adjusting to the ball rather than the drop because he didn't look natural in doing that. But the other thing, too, is, you know, you've got quarterbacks that are throwing deep balls, and Sam Huer's like Ray Allen out there shooting threes with the amount of arc he's got. And I don't know if that makes it more difficult with the amount of loft he's getting on a ball because it's like he's dropping dimes into a bucket where the other guys are throwing the ball with a lot less arc, and I don't know if it makes a difference.
Well, just to add some context to that for the fans that weren't there today, Sam Huer, I mean, basically, it was just an over-the-top throw in the sidelines, and it was one where he completed it to Odunze, and Odunze made a great over-the-shoulder catch. It was about a 30, 35-yard game. It was basically almost right to the goal line.
Yeah, to the one.
And so they threw. It was almost like I put on the board. It was almost a copycat. He threw the same ball up. It was in the exact same position, and then Odunze doesn't catch it. And so it's like...
And on that one would have been a touchdown.
Right. And so it's just one of those things where the fans see them make a great play, and now all of a sudden the exact same situation happens again. The quarterback puts it right where it's supposed to be, and the receiver doesn't come up with a catch. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh,
Is it harder to catch that rainbow pass than the line shot?
The ones that are hard as a former receiver, and I know I don't look like I was a former receiver, but as a former receiver, the ones that are the hardest are when you're looking back and you have to change over the other shoulder.
That's what it looked like
when
Dunsey did.
But he didn't do that on
that's what I thought he did on the first one.
But you mean on the second one? That's the one that he dropped. Yeah, the one he dropped, he looked over the inside shoulder and he had kind of overrun it a little bit. And so he had to arch back a little bit. But it was completely catchable. Got to make those plays. Yep. What if that's against Oregon?
Yeah.
I mean, what if you get a ball like that? He beat Fabi Kulanen off the line, made a great move at the line of scrimmage. The safety was late getting over. It was a sure touchdown, and he dropped it. You can't do that.
It like I said, is it harder? You know, if is it harder to catch a high trajectory ball like Sam's throwing?
No. It's easier to catch. It's much easier to catch one that's coming straight at you on the direct line. Those are easier.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Like I said, not worth. You know, going to the Aurora Bridge and holding up traffic as you're getting ready to commit suicide over. But
well, that's what people do.
Yeah, but it's something to keep an eye on. And if it continues, I'm not saying even through spring. If we're doing this, if we're talking about this in fall ball, though, that's something that we're going to need to worry about. And I think the coaches would. I think Jimmy Lake, like any good coach, downplayed it to a certain extent. And. But trust me, when they're in the room with Junior Adams is lighting those guys up over that.
Coming off the hand of a lefty as opposed to a righty.
Yeah, is different too. But
then you go from a lefty to a righty or a lefty to a righty. Does that matter? I don't know if it does or not.
They will
tell you it doesn't.
It does when you're first starting to catch it. It's just like when it hits your hands, it's spinning the completely opposite direction that you're used to. Because what, 90% of the people in this country throw the ball right-handed. But after a while, it's not that big of a deal. And especially the way Sam was throwing it in there with the loop, with the, you know, the huge arc under it, that makes no difference. It's when it's coming straight at you is when it's more of a difference.
You know, and no matter how well he's doing, when he throws that rainbow ball, he throws that deep ball, it's pretty looking.
Yeah, I'll say that.
Yeah, it looks good. But, you know, the other thing that really jumped out today, Chris, was, you know, Jimmy talked a little bit about this too. There were a lot of flags thrown in the secondary, and there was some false starts too. But the flags in the secondary, it was pull push and tackle, and you know, Jimmy talked about that a little bit too.
He did talk a little bit about that, and just kind of the way he wants to mix these live and these reps up is different than what he, you know, what they would have done under Chris Peterson. Under Chris Peterson, they just did not do as many live reps at all during spring or fall ball, whereas Jimmy's philosophy is to get better at it, you really got to go at it live. You've got to try to mix them as best you can. But at the same time, he totally understands that you can't hurt your guys either. You can't put them in vulnerable situations. So that's why he also talked about why that was a mix of live and kind of rap tempo today. But the flags, I mean, the amount of pre-snap penalties, like for the 11-on-11 situations, and then like you said, in the 1-on-1s and 7-on-7s, those are a little tougher because in the 1-on-1s, there's so much, the DBs are so much more exposed. But as he rightly said, and I agree, that you'll see a lot of those flags in the 1-on-1s because obviously the referees, and they're going to call it how they would normally call it. So if they see holding or if they see PI, they're going to call it. But in a regular full game, because there's so much more going on and you've got run option as opposed to just passing, there's, you know, you're just going to see a lot less penalties in terms of the holding and in terms of the pass interference stuff as far as the DBs go. But the amount of false starts, holy moly. There was a sequence there with the number ones and Morris was running the show, and I don't think hardly
sure,
any of them
were
his farts.
They let it go.
There were some, but there were some false starts with the tight ends and the tackles where it was just like they couldn't get on the same page. It seemed like there was one full series where they couldn't run a play without a penalty, without a pre-snap penalty. And sometimes it was the other side. Maybe, you know, like Zion encroached a couple times. So, it was just like at the line of scrimmage, they couldn't, neither side could really get their act together today for a fair part of it. Now, to their credit, I think they got it cleaned up to the point by when they got to the final team period, there wasn't hardly any of that stuff. But man, in the middle of practice, it was, I mean, if I was John Donovan or if I was like Malloy or Gregory, I'd be like pulling my hair out.
Yeah, you know, and there again, we don't know. You know, I kind of asked Jimmy, is this something you kind of whisper to the officials? You know, call it a little bit tighter. Or, you know, in another practice, they may say, let them go a little bit more. So, you know, we don't have insight to that. But, yeah, I mean, is this – who was it back in the day? Was it Cal? Their defensive backs just seemed to be holding on every call.
Yep, that was under – I'm trying to remember the DB coach.
Yeah, I know who you're
talking about. Who was he?
He was used to be here.
Yeah. Bald guy.
Oh, Gerald Alexander?
No.
No, I know. Yeah.
Nope, came over from Cal. And I'm totally drawing a blank. His Keith brother Hayward? Played on this. Yeah, yeah, Keith. No, not Keith
it
Hayward.
It wasn't Keith.
Nope. It was the guy. His brother was on the team.
You talking about Dante Williams?
Nope, his brother was on the team.
Can't remember. Yeah, but it just seemed like they were holding
his
on.
His brother was a Fresno, died,
oh,
passed away.
You talking about Thompson? No.
Williams. Curtis Williams.
Oh, yeah. Okay. J.D. Williams.
J.D.
Yep, that's who
gotcha.
It was.
Yeah. Okay. That's a long time ago.
How many did we go through?
That was but a lot. I thought you were talking about the last five or six years
no,
or so.
No, but they used to. I mean, that's what he taught his guys.
Every play.
Yeah.
Every
play. All the time.
Every play. But, you know, turnovers again today. We had some nice plays on defense. Yeah, I think the one that really stood out to me was Alfonso Tupitala, the linebacker.
Yeah, and I don't remember if you saw the one that Zion Tupou-Fatui did earlier in spring, where he basically just came up right, like he couldn't have been more than 10 feet from Sam Heward, and Heward threw the ball, and he just literally sprung up and caught it. And that's exactly what Tupitala did today.
This was against O'Brien.
This was against Patrick O'Brien, yeah. He did the exact same thing. It was super athletic, and I don't know what was more athletic, the anticipation to get to the point where you could make the play or the ability to hold on to it, because it was coming at him fast. And he just snagged that thing like a, you know, like a line drive to a third baseman or something. It was just snagged. And it was really, really impressive.
When you talk, you know, we're the first week into practice and, you know, a week in the books, and ask Jimmy Lake about, you know, who is the light come on for? You know, who are the standouts? And
he got mad at you.
He always gets mad at me.
Yeah, because he wanted you to narrow it down.
Jeff. So I said defense.
Yeah.
But the guy that, you know, when he talked about that, he kind of smiles at about a lot more is Dominique Hampton. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy to be really excited about.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's getting a lot of run with that first unit defense. He and Cam Williams have kind of been the fixtures there. They put Bookie Radley back, and he did.
Now that's the first time I've seen him.
Work.
Is that the first time you've seen him do extended
yep.
safety work? Like, and yep. not just the safety work, but playing the free,
yeah.
where he's basically just out there roaming as the single high safety.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was the first time I remember seeing it. But yeah. granted, I didn't see Saturday or Monday.
No. I don't remember that either. I just remember him working at the nickel.
Yeah,
but yeah.
You know, the secondary looks big and athletic, and those guys are making plays on the ball. Kyler Gordon had that one really pretty knockaway that he did. That I can't remember. I think it was intended for O'Dunsey. I'm not 100% sure. But Sam makes a really nice throw, and he knocks it away, and Kyler Gordon knocks it away. You know, and then you got Elijah Jackson and James Smith, two big guys. Those guys look like safeties,
yeah.
and they're playing corner. And Mikel Esteen looks pretty good, too, running around doing his thing. So, yeah, Washington's pretty loaded in that secondary, and they've got some impressive-looking athletes. Now, can they get it done to the level that we've all become used to
yeah.
over the last 6 years? That's going
to
be the
thing. And to add a little bit more on Hampton, again, you guys were on your way up here, but I was able to see at the very end kind of the final team period, and this was near or closer to the goal line, and because it was closer to the goal line, everything is a lot more condensed, and so the guys like Hampton, they're playing a lot more on the edge, a lot more closer to the line of scrimmage in the box than they would in space, and he just absolutely stuck. I can't remember. I wish I could remember which running back it was, but just absolutely just held the edge perfect and just used
Trice?
His leverage. No, this was Dominique Hampton.
Dominique Hampton, okay.
And, you know, again, this is, you know, a kid who's 220 playing safety, you know, looking like Cam Chancellor out there almost now, and in terms of just having the body type, and if he uses his leverage correctly and he can play behind his pads, that's a guy that when you hit him, that other guy's going back. Well, it's not one of those where it gets stuck or yeah. this guy's going to fall forward for a yard or something. Those guys go backward.
Yeah, when you take a look at Dominique Hampton at 6'1", 6'2", and he's 220 pounds and he's playing safety. But, you know, from what we've seen and what Jimmy Lake is talking about, it sure sounds like he can play any position in that secondary and they can move him around. They can move him over to corner. They can play him at safety. They can play him at the slot. And the other thing, and we saw it last year and the year before, he's an absolute monster on special teams.
He is. He is. Kyler Gordon was the one who got all the praise because he was one downing the ball inside the 5 yard line all the time.
It's the gunner's world.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, it was beautiful. But Dominique Hampton is a guy who definitely contributes a lot on special teams. I'm dubious on him playing corner. Maybe he can get out there for a play or two and do it. Or if a guy motions out and he goes with them, if he needs to be playing inside, I think. I think that's where he's at his best. Let him read the play and go make it that way. But you got to be excited about what you're seeing from this because you just don't see a lot of guys 6'2", 220 pounds in college football anymore.
Jimmy Lake also brought up Braylon Trice, who, you know, when we had Kaika Malloy earlier in the week, he said that did he say that Braylon Trice is further along than Joe Tryon was at the same stage?
He said he's going to follow. He's following the same path as Joe Tryon and probably will have a better career.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's pretty high praise.
Yeah. And well, today he had one where he shucked off a blocker and took on Sunday at the line of scrimmage, dropped him, but it would have been a drop for a loss. And he's definitely put on some size. This is the first time because we were up, what would you say, 20, 30 feet in the air? Whatever it is in the east stands when we're standing there.
Oh yeah,
when we were standing looking down.
Yeah, on the Mondays.
And I hadn't seen Trice up close until today, which you know we were right on the same level with him. You can see he's reshaped his body quite a bit. He's added some bulk. He's added some muscle to his frame. I like what I'm seeing.
Was he 210 when he showed up?
No, he was 230.
He was 230, but it was different. It was a different 230.
Yeah, I just remember him not being real big.
No.
Not being real big. But on the offensive side of the ball, Jimmy had high praise for Jalen Polk.
Yep, as Chris said, best day as a Husky so far. He's only 5 practices in, but Jimmy said that himself. He actually had a nice grab from O'Brien. You're talking about the one earlier in practice where they blew the horn accidentally, but
yeah, that was the first catch that I saw him make.
But there was another one where he caught one between two defenders,
and
O'Brien hit him right down the center of the field in between two defenders, and he comes down with it. So, it looks like the light maybe just turning on for him a little bit, and if he starts putting pressure on McMillan, on Bynum, on O'Dunsey, I think that's only going to bode well for the receiver group.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, he's a guy that came in with a lot of praise because the bottom line is he's still a young kid. He's still in that same class with a guy like O'Dunsey or McMillan, but yet he's the one that played in 10 games for Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. He's the one that, what did he catch, 28 passes or something like that? 22, yeah. 28? I can't remember.
It was in the 20s.
But, yeah, he caught a number of passes. And that's an offense where you're expected to be a really good receiver. I mean, they don't, you know, at Texas Tech, they don't, they don't pick the nobodies as far as the receivers go. And so he already started to show up. And like Jimmy said, I think the lights started to really go on for him. But to me, that's more about just familiarity and getting comfortable with what he's being asked to do here compared to Texas Tech, two totally different offenses.
The other guy he said the light came on was JV on Sunday because JV's light bulb came on that he realized what tempo it was.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah. First thing that Jimmy Lake mentioned to the media post-practice was Richard Newton. And, Richard was back at practice today, and I thought the first couple of practices he looked like an absolute monster. And today he was working a lot with the threes, and I was kind of going, okay, what's going on with that? But he kind of informed us with what was going on. He had a couple of false positive COVID tests, and
that's why he missed two of the first three practices.
I got to imagine that's just got to be incredibly frustrating for a guy like that.
Yeah, absolutely. But he said they've made the change, and they're hoping that won't be an issue going forward.
And I keep on telling this to people on the board. You know, when something happens like Richard Newton's not practicing, you know, instead of jumping to conclusions and being judgmental, be more curious on what's going on, because a lot of the time, you know, it's a class or something like this, and, you know, everybody always thinks the worst case scenario. I'll never forget, you know, with Tyrone Willingham, and I'm trying to remember, it was the linebacker. It was Scott White wasn't practicing. And so we asked him about it. And, you know, Tyrone just said, you know, it's not football related. Well, what is it? It's not football related. I can't talk about it. You know, so everybody's thinking the worst. And he had the damn flu. Why couldn't he just say he's not feeling well? He'll be back. But, you know, just when you hear of things like that, you know, it's good to hear that Richard Newton, you know, he's fine and everything turned out well with Richard Newton, because I think he looks like a monster out there.
Well, it's funny because my recollection with Willingham is I thought it was Ty Erickson had mono.
Yeah, but, it was Scott White.
Yeah, but I don't remember. But either way, they're how they treat these things, you know, depending on how they do it, they can certainly blow up and become much bigger things than they ever should have. And typically, they're usually much bigger deals in the public sphere than they would have normally been anyway. But with HIPAA, sometimes it's an issue, and just with other times,
can
it's
you
like,
just ask the kid, "Is it all right if I tell him you have the flu?"
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, there are ways to be able to do it to make it work, but the transparency is laudable. I mean, it's I'm glad he did it.
Jimmy Lake also went out of his way to talk about this coming Saturday. Weather's going to be absolutely stunning on Saturday. It's going to be Chamber of Commerce Day for sure. Highs expected near 80 on Saturday. So it's going to be gorgeous. And just, he gave us some tidbits on what to expect, Chris.
Yeah, it's going to be fully live. And
I doubt the quarterbacks will be, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
lots of scrimmaging.
Yeah. I mean, that is one thing to think about. I mean, because if they really ever made it fully, fully live, I'd be impressed, because there might be some reps that we've seen maybe in fall camp over the years where it's gone live. But yeah, I'm talking about even quarterbacks, but those guys usually are a protected species 24/7, 365. But even if it's 10 on 11, it's still awfully good stuff. And it's still stuff you would never expect to see as a fan at the University of Washington, because it just doesn't ever happen except for one time in the spring, and that's spring game. So to see it 2 weeks before spring game, because that's the other thing we got to think about too, guys. After Saturday's practice, we're halfway through spring ball already.
Yeah.
I mean, it has gone so fast, it's ridiculous. So
yeah, you know, just make sure to go to GoHuskies.com, sign up for that, and do what you need to do on that. But it's going to be a gorgeous day. And for those who haven't been out for a while, there's a new place over in U-Village. Shake Shack is open. So just kind of a heads up if you want to go out for a burger afterwards. It's a great place to go. But just switching over to basketball real quick. Big news with the hiring of an assistant. Mike Hopkins and staff announced today the hiring of Wyking Jones, who was the head coach at Cal. He was an assistant under Cusano Martin, got elevated to the coach at Cal. Didn't work out well for him as a head coach, but he's got a pretty good reputation as an assistant, and I think one of the key things that he's going to bring to the table, he works with the bigs. He's a really good coach of the bigs, and it's something that Nate Roberts desperately needs, something that, you know, Jackson Grant is going to desperately need when he gets here come the fall, and also Riley Sorn. And, you know, they're looking at bringing in another big or two, especially a rim protector. So bringing in a guy who can work with the bigs and the recruiting reputation that he has. He was at Louisville before Cal and has an excellent reputation as a recruiter as well as a coach. So I think it's a really good hire. Just, you know, thoughts off the top of your head on that, Chris?
Well, yeah, I was going to mention the Louisville piece, because if you're an assistant under Rick Pitino during that time at Louisville when they won a national championship and they just, well, now all these wins got vacated during his time there because of other things that happened that didn't have anything to do with Wyking Jones. But so that's a little unfortunate, but he certainly has shown the ability to recruit. When he was at Cal under Quenzo Martin, he recruited Ivan Rabb. He recruited Jaylen Brown. I mean, those are, you know, two guys that are awfully, awfully good players.
Five-star guys.
And so he not only has West Coast ties, but he has ties to the area, it sounds like, with Rotary. So it sounds like a good fit overall. My immediate reaction when I heard the news was, like, I thought everyone was just going to cap on him for what he did as a Cal head coach. But clearly, in hindsight, when you look at it over the years, it was simply a situation where Cal wanted to hire from within really quickly because Konzo Martin took the Missouri job, and they just wanted to fill the spot, and they thought he was ready to go. And clearly, when you have stints at Louisville under Rick Pitino, when you have a stint at New Mexico under Steve Alford, clearly there's going to be people on your side that think that you're ready to go, and he just wasn't ready to be head coach at that time. Now, if he gets a few years under his belt at Washington, who knows? He might end up, you know, parlaying that into becoming a head coach somewhere. Might even be able to parlay it into becoming a head coach at Washington. Who knows? But this is a good situation for him, and it's definitely a good situation for Washington for the reasons you laid out, Kim.
Expect more basketball news to be coming down the pike. Hell, it could even be happening as we're doing this podcast. But there's definitely a lot of stuff going on in the background for basketball, so just keep it tuned in. Just a reminder, if you're looking for those daily updates, and before I get there, Chris, anything I forgot to mention, anything you need to add?
No, not really. Just, you know, I thought that obviously the play of Dominic Hampton, the safety stood out to me a little bit today because of the way Hampton played. Jacoby Covington showed a lot to me in the team period with his toughness. But I think certain guys started to show out. Alex Cook didn't really play all that much today. He didn't do much in the team or 11-on-11 sessions, even though he had his helmet. So, yeah, I just think that overall it was a really, really good day. I was shocked at the live mix. And then when Jimmy Lake said they were going to go fully live on Saturday, that really kind of – that was a great surprise, and obviously I really hope fans come out for, again, the reasons you described, Kim, with the weather and everything else. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Scott?
You know, I agree with Chris. Thought the defense won the day, but I thought the offense had made some plays. Liked seeing some of the full contact stuff. Hope the receivers can start just making better catches, making more plays, because this offense can be pretty good if they start doing that. Otherwise, yeah, looking forward to Friday, and then Saturday, full live thing. I'm looking forward. I'm kind of interested to see how many people show up because it is a Saturday.
Anything recruiting wise to touch bases on, or just pretty much static?
Well, it sounds like as we're doing our podcast, Caleb Presley, the cornerback from Eastside Catholic, 2023 kid, got an offer from the University of Washington shortly after practice wrapped up. So. Definitely something on there. And the one recruit I did see in the stands was a kid that's related to one of the players, Landon Donovan. Donovan Hatchett. Sorry, Landon Donovan.
Jeez, wow, there's a soccer
I'm going
for
soccer
you.
Right there.
Nice.
Donovan Hatchett, Garen Hatchett's younger brother, who is a 2023 offensive line prospect. He was on campus with his mom and dad and a friend of his, and they were taking in practice, and pretty excited to see Garen out there playing center. So,
yeah, I think I'm looking forward to most to Saturday. I think we'll get a better idea.
Jimmy said you couldn't golf until after
3 o'clock.
Okay,
Meridian Valley. I think we'll get a good idea of what we have in the running back room. You know, when we go to more scrimmaging and full contact. So that's what I'm most looking forward to on Friday. Mm-hmm. So Saturday. Yeah. So,
but there is practice Friday.
Yeah. So. I'll be here. But, you know, just a reminder for those looking for the daily updates again, and, you know, the breaking news alerts like we did this morning with the hiring of Wyking Jones, just shoot us a note, huskystadium@gmail.com, subject line newsletter. We will hook you up and, it's good. You know, it's been a long year and a half without football, you know, and just not being able to really go to the basketball game. So it's fun. It's fun to be out here. And just to note, on the gorgeous day, and I'm the one who hates the cold, Fetters is the one with the hoodie, with the hood up the entire practice.
I had the hood up? So I wouldn't get sunburned.
Okay.
That's why. No, it had nothing to do with the temperature.
Okay. I was getting my face.
So knock it off, man. You don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm not buying that at all. So
Scott's buying it. That's all that matters.
Big guys don't do heat.
I'm just mad that you convinced me to bring in my jacket, and then I didn't even wear it.
That's okay.
Now I got to carry it.
I got my wool-based layers on. Yeah. So for all of us at togman.com, I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.